Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, July 9th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page XVIII, the forward to the second edition. So I'll say that again, XVIII. And we're reading the first paragraph only, hence the two men, and we'll be studying that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Robin P., the 12 Traditions, Reggie O., and the readers of the text are Kathy Jo P., and Margaret D. And the share ID for Wednesday, July 8th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 14,948. That's 14948. And for this morning's meeting, Thursday, July 9th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 14,952. That's 14952. Our newcomer greeter is Kara L., and our announcements is Leslie M. Thank you all for your service. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Robin P. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you. Hi, this is Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. Step one. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, and our life had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us, and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Robin P., and I will now ask Reggie O. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Reggie.
Good morning, Mo, and thank you. This is Reggie O. I'm gratefully recovered here in the Los Angeles area, and these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Well, thank you very much, Reggie O. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone, and then once you are done, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. That's the star 1 button, not the mute button on your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are in the foreword to the second edition on page XVII, and we'll be starting with the first paragraph, hence the two men set to work. And we'll be studying that one paragraph only. And I will now ask Kathy Jo P. to get us started. Good morning, Kathy Jo.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. Hence, the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving in the ward of the Akron City Hospital. Their very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately and became AA number 3. He never had another drink. This work at Akron continued through the summer of 1935. There were many failures, but there was an occasional heartening success. When the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been formed, though no one realized it at the time. So I want to grab the sentence above this paragraph that we read yesterday because I feel like it is so vital with this paragraph, and it is also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. And so when I first came to the Vision Line, which I sort of feel like it's the ward, it's the hospital, it's where we come in sick and tired of being sick and tired and desperate. My sponsor, who I was working with, maybe on day 7, I was supposed to call her at 6 a.m., and I called her at 6:08. And she said, "Are you going to call me on time tomorrow? Because I set out this time to work with someone else so that I don't die, so that I don't end up back in the food." I never called her late again. And I realize the reason, I mean, it feels a little selfish, but the reason we do this work with others is so that we can stay in the book and that we can be reminded of what step one, especially, and being in the food is like. And it says there were many failures. There's a person on the line that says he has 100% recovery rate with sponsees. He stays abstinent. And I really appreciate that because not all of the sponsees that I have worked with are recovered. In fact, I can count them on one hand, and I've been doing this work for 4.5 years. But I have worked with nearly 100. But what's important is that I am carrying the message. It is vital for my recovery, and it tells me that here, that I need to keep doing the work and bringing the message frantically. We talk about doing the steps like our hair is on fire. We need to carry the message like our hair is on fire. We need to continue to work with others so that we can be free. And every single time that we do that, we are rewarded back. In fact, it says it's an occasional heartening success. It helps us. It gives us more hope. It lets us see God more when we see God working in others' lives. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kathy Jo P., for getting us started. And I just want to remind everybody that if you have shared in the last 2 days, we value your experience, but we ask you to step back and let others share too. So if you haven't shared in the last two days, please give me your name.
Heather W.
Heather.
Barbara E.
Bruce E.
Barbara E. And Bruce E. Barbara.
Tiffany P.
Who was that?
Tiffany P.
Gotcha, Tiffany. Thank you. I can take two more.
Michelle J.
Michelle J. Gotcha, Michelle.
Donna W.
W.
Donna W. All right, we got a team there, a lineup. Okay, here it is. Heather W., Barbara E., Bruce E., Tiffany P., Michelle J., Donna W. Okay. Good morning, Heather. Get us started.
Hey, y'all. Good morning. This is Heather W., recovered here in Baltimore. Just grateful to be on the line and, yeah, really got in there. Didn't think I'd go first, but I'm grateful. And this paragraph, I mean, it's just exciting to me, you know. I can feel it when they say, hence the two men sent to work almost frantically. And that's what I tell my sponsees, you know, when they get to the 12th step. Like, this is strenuous, intensive work. We have to be carrying this message. And as was shared, you know, we have to carry this work, this message, and do this strenuous work so we stay recovered, right? And it is so hopeful. They say their first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. I think that word desperate is so important. You know, when I came into OA, I was pretty desperate. Yeah, you know, things were not good. I was young. I was only 21. Food ran my life. My weight ran my life. But I did not recover immediately. It took me about 6 years to fully accept step one, to finally understand my true powerlessness. You know, 6 years, I wasn't desperate enough. So I think that word is so key. You know, desperation is a gift, right? And until we're really, truly desperate, you know, it's just so hard to get that step one experience to fully understand, you know, admit to our innermost self that we can't eat like other people. And then, you know, when they talk about, yeah, there were many failures, and I've been there, you know, worked with others. I've had a lot of sponsees. I haven't had a lot of sponsees get to step four. I haven't had a lot of sponsees get to step 12. And it can be hard, you know. My ego tells me, well, Heather, you're not good enough. You're not a good enough sponsor. You need to do this. No, it's not up to me. You know, I thank God for my sponsor, the woman who took me through the book, but it could have been anyone, you know, because I was ready. I was ready. All I needed someone was to guide me through this. So I have to remember and keep my ego in check. But when those occasional heartening successes,
when I get to step 12 with someone and I see them start to sponsor and do this work, it's so beautiful. So I'm just so grateful for that. So grateful to have a message of depth and weight to carry. And, you know, as was shared at the beginning, yeah, I stay recovered. You know, thank God I stay recovered. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Heather W. Barbara E., followed by Bruce E. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for hearing my name. I can't help thinking, I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I was thinking about Harriet Tubman, who was a slave, escaped slavery, and yet went back to save hundreds of other people, risking her life to do that. And I think that's kind of like, well, we are risking our lives if we don't go back to try and save other people, because freedom isn't free. And that triangle, at the beginning of the book, we lost it after the first edition, that equilateral triangle says unity, recovery, and service. And that's what the fellowship is, unity. And the service is what we do for others, and recovery is the bottom of the triangle that's holding everything together. And the blue circle that surrounded showed me at least, that I'm never going to end this OA journey. I feel like I'm on a recovery train, and everyone in it is my fellow. And we are so happy, and we don't want to get off that train, because this is what it is. For me, serenity is simple. No decision to make. I simply can't change anything but me. And the cornerstone of the building, throwing many illusions in, is my willingness to do this program, in spite of the fact that I really had no knowledge of God. And then the keystone is the wedge at the highest point of the arch, all the steps that hold us together. And I do believe in a God that offers me beauty instead of ashes. But I don't chase frantically after people. I can see in their eyes if they really have the desire, if they're really desperate enough. And I approach them in a friendly manner, and I talk to them, if they're interested, a little about my experience of over two decades in this program. And, of course, they ask, how much weight did I lose? That's so unimportant, but they want to know. So I tell them 130 pounds. But more importantly, it's the weight between my ears that I have lost. The misery, the anger, the isolation, the depression. Who wouldn't want that? And not everyone I've worked with has recovered, as you said, all of you. And the thought that it was somehow my fault, my sponsor told me, was just false pride and arrogance. And I had to understand my relationship with my higher power. Thank you so much. I can't wait to hear the rest of you.
And thank you, Barbara E. Bruce E., followed by Tiffany P. Good morning, Bruce.
Well, good morning. Thank you. It's Bruce E. I'm recovered in Florida. And these two men set to work frantically upon alcoholics. And I think my remembrance of this is that Bill had been sober about 6 months and Dr. Bob just got sober. And they realized, why they worked frantically, well, they realized that their sobriety was contingent upon helping other people, which is true for me, too, and all of us. Bingo, they hit the jackpot. They got alcoholic number three. It goes on to say, though, there were a lot of failures, but occasionally a success. And my whole life is this, you know, a whole lot of failures, but occasionally success. Thank God I got recovered here, because, man, I've had a lot of failures in my life with other people, trying to work with other people, but occasionally a success. So when I first got recovered, you know, my sponsor said, you can't keep it unless you give it away. But my sponsor also said to me when I was first working with him something that was earth-shattering to me. He said, I hope you stay abstinent sober. And I said, well, yeah, I do too. And he said, because, he said, that's contingent upon how I do. And he said, if you go back out there again, I may end up going back out there, and if I go back out there, I may die. And I'm thinking, holy cow, you got to be kidding me. He's going to die if I don't stay sober, excuse me, and abstinent. Well, it could happen, I guess. So my whole success is going to come from helping other people. That's what it's all about. That's what I finally realized at this time in my life and this point in the 12 steps that success in my life comes from helping other people. So I first got on here and started leaving my name for people that I could sponsor, wanted people that I wanted to sponsor. And I'm getting calls from people. And they're saying, yeah, I really appreciate your share. Really appreciate talking to you. Thanks for picking up and all this. And I got a sponsor already. And I'm going, oh, no, I thought the person called me because they wanted to sponsor, you know. And I'm thinking, when is this ever gonna click? And finally, bang, it clicked, and I got three people to sponsor that really wanted to. But I realized, looking back on that, that God was working on my attitude and my thought process, because I was wanting to sponsor because I want to help people and help myself. But I was sponsoring. I had that holier than thou attitude. You know, I can fix you. You know, if you'll just let me sponsor you, I can fix you. And that's totally wrong. Ego is behind that. And so God was working on my personality and on me to get me to that point. So I thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Bruce E. Tiffany P., followed by Michelle J. Good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for their shares and your service. I'm Tiffany P., recovered in San Antonio. And what stood out to me this morning in the reading, their very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. It's that word desperate that stands out to me, because I've just used it a lot in the last couple of days in talking to a newcomer and someone who's new to sponsoring. And it really, I believe my recovery was truly dependent on my level of desperation. And I shared with someone a couple of days ago, I believe my moment of surrender was back in 2016. I remember just sitting on the couch and thinking, like, God, I don't care if I don't lose 1 pound. I just need the pain to stop. I just can't keep living like this. Because life had just become so miserable and so unmanageable, I knew I couldn't do it anymore. And if that meant, if the stopping the pain meant doing the steps, putting the food down and working these steps, then that's what I was going to do. And so I knew I had become desperate when my sponsor, the woman I approached to ask to sponsor me, said, you know, I use the big book. And I didn't have any questions. I didn't say, oh, I thought it was going to be a different way. I went and purchased a brand new big book. You know, when I stopped asking questions and started saying, yes, okay, this is what I'll do, and I followed through and showed up and did the work that my sponsor dictated and made calls and talked to others, that was indication of my level of desperation. And, you know, I heard when I first came to these meetings, I heard people saying the gift of desperation. And, you know, outside of the room, you know, it sounds preposterous to say a desperation is a gift, but in this program it truly is, because if I don't have that level of desperation, I'm not going to be willing to take the steps necessary. And I'm not even just referring to the 12 steps. I'm talking about just putting down the food or being honest about, you know, my food, making, you know, two, three, however many phone calls a day and asking people what they did in addition to, you know, the real work of doing the 12 steps. And that's what I try to impart to my sponsees. But as, you know, others have shared, I'm just going to mimic, you know, not everyone we work with is going to get to step 12 and reach that recovered state and be able to carry a message to others. But that's between them and their higher power. My responsibility as a sponsor, as a recovered woman, is to show up, is to carry the message that I've been gifted with. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tiffany P., Michelle J., followed by Donna W. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, everybody on the line. This is Michelle J. I am recovered because I am not thinking about food today. It doesn't drive me. It's not my motive in life anymore. And so I'm abstinent from food and pretty much recovered there, but always recovering, always finding out that there's little rooms of my life and my head and my thinking that need to be worked on. I'm going through this paragraph this morning and I'm going, two men. Well, that right there kind of warns me that it's not just me alone. It's others. It's you guys. It's the face-to-face. We need each other. And that's why God did that. And then you have the frantically, and that's telling me that they cared. They cared immensely. And I think these men went from a selfless motive or a selfish motive from went into selfless to other must. I think that's just part and the key of our all of our recoverings. But the motive does change from I want something and I want to keep it to I want somebody else to have it. That's where I love to strive every day to get to, because I start out my morning with the I, and then I want to really get into the they or them. And arriving, well, that means you got to do something. Go out. Go out there and get somebody. Go out there and seek somebody. Look, be active in this program. And then first case, well, there's lots of folks. We're not going to do just one. We're going to have a lifetime of this. Desperate, that word brought out to me the need to surrender. When I'm working with people and I hear this little thing, a little chink in their armor that says, but I just can't do that. They're not desperate enough. Oh, my. But I'm not going to peg that on them. I'm going to try to woo them into understanding surrender. There were many failures. They didn't fail. The program didn't fail. God didn't fail. We need to turn it over and allow God to do his work in his time and in his way. The next thing came out was heartening success. Heartening gave me the indication that there was feeling there, an emotion. I want to care so much about others. That when they have their successes, it's not about me being successful, me doing this. It's about God and this person getting what I got. You know, I'm realizing now that every day I'm getting more recovered because I am becoming less motivated for myself and more for others. What God has given to me, I want to give to others. If somebody gave me a pill and said, this is going to cure your cancer, and I took it, I wouldn't just live on that and hang my hat on that. Well, that's for me. I'd want to give it to others. And that's my motive today. More than keeping my abstinence, I have such joy. I want to give it to others. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Michelle J. I've got a noisy truck going by here. Okay. Before we go to Donna W., let me remind everyone where we're at. We're in the forward to the second. Oops, I'm talking away and my mic isn't in my mouth. I apologize. All right, before I get to Donna W., let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in the forward to the second edition on page XVII, and we'll be reading the first paragraph only, hence the two men. And after Donna W., I will take another lineup. All right, Donna W., good morning.
Good morning, Mo. Donna W. here, calling in from Palo Alto, California. Grateful to be abstinent and in recovery today. And let's see, this paragraph makes me think how, you know, if food is the solution, then what's my real disease? It's, you know, the Dr. Silkworth tells us it's our restless, irritable, and discontentment, which in my words, I translate that into feeling anxious, overwhelmed, and I'm also going to say selfish. So on page 62, in the big book, it talks about that there are real problem that is that we're selfish, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our troubles. And so by nature, I'm a selfish, self-centered person. And by helping others, that helps me get out of that self-centeredness. And if that's what's really taking me down is the self-centeredness, self-pity, selfishness, self-absorption, which leads to all that self-centered fear and anxiety and overwhelm, then thinking of others is the antidote. And I do find this helpful, like sometimes when I'm having trouble sleeping with all my worries in my head, sometimes I'll pray for other people, and that does kind of quiet, that quiets my mind because I'm so busy trying to figure out everything in my own life. And then, you know, like I do my outreach calls. I really don't want to, but it's always good to think of others. You know, whenever I do them, I'm really grateful just to, for a minute or two to think of someone else during the day. And, you know, I do my big book calls with my sponsees. And again, like, oh God, I got so many other things to do, but you know what? It ends up being a bright spot in my day. So, you know, that constant thought, and it says somewhere else, which I don't have the page number, in front of me, but constant thought of others and how we can help them. That's that as a, as an addict, that's what, that's part of my, that is part of my, my recovery is the constant thought of others. So when people think that sponsoring is optional, it's not optional. A third of the big book is about being a sponsor, helping others. And it always heartens me to read when Bill says, even though he's sober, he's still prey to depression and misery. And I am too. And, you know, and then he says that what always helps is he would go to the hospital and find another drunk to help. And so that's where I need to be because, you know, me just like dwelling on my misery and fears has never helped. And if anything, you know, it goes to the poor me, another bag of something to eat. And so I must think of others today, and I'm praying to ask God, how can I serve you? Is that time?
Not yet.
You're very
14 seconds.
Okay, I'm hearing someone else. And then you know, I also see how with my work, I try to be, how can I serve the people I'm working with today? Like, really, God, I'm here to be of service.
Now,
which is not. Thanks, which is not my natural instinct by any means, but I'm grateful to keep learning from all of you. Thanks.
Well, and thank you, Donna W. And so I'll now open the lines up to share on this page, XVII, first paragraph, hence the two men. If you shared in the last 2 days, please refrain, let other people share today. So who would like to share?
Courtney M.
Courtney M.
Gloria A.
Gloria A.
Amy
Toby
W.
A. Linda R.
Okay, I heard of Amy. What was your last initial, Amy?
W.
Amy W. And then there was someone else after you. Was it a Laura?
No, Linda R.
Oh, Linda. Sorry, Linda.
Yeah, that's okay.
Two more?
Reva G.
Reva G.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Toby A.
All right, we'll stop there. Thank you, Toby. Toby A. So I have Courtney M., Gloria A., Amy W., Linda R., Reva G., and Toby A. Okay, Courtney, get us started.
Thank you. This is Courtney M., recovered in Southwest Florida. And there are lots of things that strike me about this paragraph, but specifically, the word that jumps out at me is that they frantically went to work, which there's that desperation again. And we were just talking about the gift. I'm sorry, there's some background noise there. That's not me.
Please, if you're unmuted, please mute your phone.
Anyway, we were just, you know, somebody else had shared about the gift of desperation, and here's that gift again, because they were so desperate to get to work with others, they went out and you know, increased the fellowship, and here we are, you know, how many years later, and the fellowship spans the globe, because they were frantic to get to work with other people and give away what they had found. And I'm so grateful for that. I had a conversation yesterday with somebody on outreach who was hesitant to work with others and hesitant to sponsor because she was just worried that she was going to do it wrong. And you know, one of the things that pieces of wisdom that was passed along to me with working with others, because I felt that way too when I first started, because I just did not have a whole lot of confidence. Is that, you know, the whole thing here isn't just like we aren't going to make or break somebody with our sponsoring. If somebody's really, really desperate to get better, they're going to get better. They're going to recover if they're working their program. We're just a guide. We're just showing them how we work our program and where they can find the information. We're not a judge. We don't tell them exactly what to do or, you know, how they should tie their shoes or what that's not what we're here for. We're here to guide others and give away the wisdom that's been given to us. And when we look at it that way, we're just not all that important. You know, when we get self-important, or at least I know from my own experience, when I get self-important, I get a big head, and then at the same time, my heart gets smaller. When my head gets bigger, my heart gets smaller, and it's the reverse. When I give away, and I work with others, my heart gets bigger, and I feel blessed instead of feeling like a failure. And that keeps me in recovery, working with others, frantically, desperately working with others and not being so self-centered that I'm not willing to work with others because I am afraid I am going to screw up.
Time.
Thank you very much. With that, I pass.
Well, thank you, Courtney M. Gloria A., followed by Amy W. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, very well.
Okay. Yeah, I really love this paragraph. When it says, hence the two men set to work almost frantically, right away what came to mind was that two men, we are a we program. This is a we program. Can't do the program without two of us. So I was really grateful for that reminder. Also, the next sentence where it says, in their very first case, a desperate one recovered immediately and became AA number three. The key word was desperate. Definitely, I never thought being desperate was a gift. But coming into program, I've learned that desperation is a gift. In fact, I've heard at many meetings that a gift of desperation is an acronym for God. You know, if we need to be desperate in order to, and that's a gift from God telling us that we need to get working on our recovery. And also the next paragraph, the next sentence where it talks about the two men worked throughout the summer and fall, and there were many failures and an occasional heartening success. What I'm reminded of is that those two men remained sober throughout the summer and fall of 1935. Thus, God had a plan. He had been working through them the whole time. Those two men were the ones who stayed sober. And that's what I have to be reminded when I get really discouraged by working with people in our program of OA, that what's important is that I need to look back and remember that those other people that I worked with, they were responsible for their own recovery, and I'm responsible for mine. And that who came out of that with abstinence was me. I'm still here. I'm still abstinent. So I just keep going, and I still keep giving away what I've been given. And to whoever wants it, whoever asks for it, and I'll just keep working that way. And that way, I'm I'm doing what God wants me to do, giving it away. Okay. So I think that's all I have today. Thank you for allowing me to share, and I pass.
Thank you, Gloria A. Amy W., followed by Linda R. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service. That's really, I'm so grateful to be on the line this morning listening to everyone's wonderful shares. My name's Amy W. I'm recovered in Southern California. And what strikes me this morning is this sentence: when the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been formed, though no one realized it at the time. And this strikes me this morning because it's not like Bill and Bob said, okay, we're going to start with the Akron group first, then we're going to have that, you know, meetings here, and then we're going to form ourselves over in New York, and then from there we're going to branch out here and there and map it out across the United States. And that's so much self-will, and we know a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So I'm so struck by this because it's so God-centered and higher power-centered. And this is something that I'm learning through this program, is to put down the reins. And it's not always easy. I know, though, if I don't, I'm going to be back in the food. And I've had years in a relapse cycle, and that's not where I want to live because I don't want to die. So I'm so struck that they let this be God-centered for them and form how it was going to form and live in the unknown and ask God and be guided. So I came through so desperate, as it's mentioned here, and now I do frantically work with sponsees. And in that, too, I don't know how it's going to go. And it's not me. I'm not God. So who knows? Sometimes even when they go back in the food, maybe it's something I said or someone else said that, you know, catches their attention, that's later something that might help them. We don't know. I love when Harlan says that any idiot can count the seeds in an apple, but only God knows how many apples there are in a seed. So I just repeat daily, trust God, clean house, help others. And it is really an honor to be working with other people and sponsees. I used to not feel that way. And the reason was is because I was so scared I was going to be relapsing. I'd have to call them and say, I'm sorry, I relapsed. And living in fear is learning how to deal with fear today with our fear inventories and giving that over. So I just want to thank everybody. It's really great to be here, and I'll pass.
And thank you, Amy W. Linda R., followed by Reva G. Good morning, Linda.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Very well.
Thank you so much for your service. Linda R., recovered in North Carolina. Just so happy I'm on the meeting today. Relating and identifying, and again, it shows me that I really belong in this program. Anyway, this paragraph, you know, everyone has really said a lot of the same types of thoughts that I have. I also looked at that word, the word frantically. For me, you know, this saying in program, we work the program like our hair is on fire. And when I sponsor, you know, it's really done with a lot of enthusiasm. It's necessity, because if I want to keep my spiritual growth in the program and my stability in my program, that's how I choose to sponsor. And, you know, I liked this. It also said here that, you know, the first case was a desperate one. And I really relate to that, because when I came into program many years ago, I was desperate. So I grasped onto the steps immediately. Thank God I got abstinent and I was able to get to a physical body weight of my, you know, health and who I am as a person. But when I came in, I was desperate. And it says here that the person recovered immediately. Again, there's that word recovered, which I never really knew what that meant until I really went through the steps again with a person that really, you know, gave me a lot of depth and weight. So recovered is mentioned many times in the big book, but in the doctor's opinion, I finally realized what it meant to be recovered, that I knew that I had a physical allergy, but I didn't realize that the mental obsession was so strong, and that part of my entire abstinence to be recovered is to have both the neutrality, my mental obsession and my physical allergy in a bay. So this paragraph, again, you know, I like the fact that, you know, they were making it like a spiral effect, and without them, we wouldn't be here. So they did. They worked this program avidly. Service to me is a very crucial part of my recovery. And, you know, I can't wait. Like when I finish with one person, I can't wait to get the next person so that I can also keep reviewing the steps, getting more spiritual enlightenment, and being able to have that, you know, psychic change that they talk about in the program. Thank you for allowing me to share. Bye. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, Linda R. Reva G., followed by Toby A.
This is Reva in Brooklyn, and you may hear traffic because I'm sitting on Atlantic Avenue, for those who know Brooklyn. It's a heavily trafficked street. And I'm sorry for the background noise. When I have read the big book, I have often had feelings about it that were not necessarily the main idea or had nothing to do, presumably, with the steps or my feelings about it than what was actually intended, I think. But when I read Dr. Silkworth's opinion, I am so amazed at how compassionate he was and how giving of himself, self-sacrificing. I don't know a single professional, for example, that would say, you know, the way I earn my living, really, I'm earning my living, but I don't know what I'm doing. And then basically he said that about himself and his whole field. And in the reading that we just did, it was like Bill sitting down with Bob, the first two sitting together. And after that, there were so many sitting down, one drunk with another drunk, not a professional, not anybody who is going to earn a living doing this. These are all people who are struggling to survive. And so I feel that the book is kind of written in blood. And when it says that resentment is our number one offender, I look at that over and over again and say to myself, now, how did they ever figure that out? How did they know what was the biggest offender? How did they know the effect of alcohol? And I felt they were writing about me. What they said about alcoholics, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm just another junkie on the road. But I'm an alcoholic who uses food. That is exactly how I think of myself. That book was written about me. It tells me what I feel. It tells me what I feel, which is going to kill me. And when it says kill me, I mean, it means kill me. I mean, I will die. When it says on the second step that I am insane, I mean, it means that I'm insane. And when I started to do my second step, I realized I don't think either of my parents were sane, and so I didn't even stand a chance of being sane. So God was going to introduce me to sanity. And I think God has introduced me to sanity to an extent. And so I adore this book, not just for what it says, but for what it implies and what I feel as I read it and what I feel as I hear all of you share. And it's in those almost subliminal messages that I can feel the presence of God. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Reva G. And Toby A., you will take us out.
Hi, my name is Toby A., recovered compulsive overeater in Fremont, California. I say recovered. That's the first time I've said the word recovered on this call. And what I really wanted to share about is that part of this story of two men helping another is that there was that desperate case and he recovered immediately. He never had another drink. And that's what happened to me in another program in Alcoholics. With my drinking, when I got sober, I never had another drink. And that didn't happen to me with food. And I was so frustrated when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I was so frustrated that it wasn't the same, that it wasn't immediate. And when I did get abstinent for several years, I was working with other people. That's what was the difference. That's what saved me, was I was working with other people. It wasn't just that I was going to meetings, because I'd been doing that before. It wasn't just because I was writing down my food and sending it into a sponsor, because I was doing that before. It was because I was working with other people, I was staying abstinent. And I just lost the interest in overeating. It was just gone. It was removed from me. And that's recovered. And when I moved and stopped working with other people and didn't, you know, get connected to the meetings, I went to meetings, and when I moved and I didn't like the meetings, and so I didn't go, it never occurred to me, you need to help other people. It's not about whether or not, you know, you like the way they run the meetings, or whether or not the secretary or anybody else in the meeting is abstinent. If they're not abstinent, help and work with them. And, you know, there were many failures, but there was the occasional heartening success. These two men, when they work with people, regardless of whether the people they worked with were getting sober, they were staying sober. And that's what happens to me. And now I'm going to meetings. I'm writing my food. I got desperate. I was a desperate case. And this past December, I got abstinent.
Time.
And I thank you.
Oh, did you pass?
No, did you say time?
I did. Yeah.
So I stopped.
Oh, okay. Well, then just say pass. Some people finish their sentence. Okay.
Pass.
Yeah, all right, Toby. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for your shares today.
You.
Yeah, yeah. And so thank you for your service for this Thursday, July. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Margaret D. to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Hey, everybody. My name is Margaret D. I'm very grateful to be a recovered compulsive eater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.